you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to have you here at the show. Yesterday morning, we opened up with an email asking about the Springfield 1911 Loaded series. So I gave the information I had, and I had a listener send me in an email on this. Somebody who's had firsthand, he owned one of these things, had his hands right on. So this is what he says. Hey, Bill. Just an FYI, I had a Springfield Loaded Series 1911. It was okay. Mine was stainless, and the stainless was not, capitalized not, very good. The stainless is unusually soft and scratches and mars very easily. I personally would not buy another. Just my 2 cents, Guy. All right, Guy, thank you very much for sending that in. It's always nice to have somebody with some hands-on experience about something rather than just what you hear and understand through the industry. We've got, it's a rather inexpensive 1911 that has all kinds of fancy stuff on it, all kinds of extras. So you got to figure that somewhere or another, it's why is this gun $600 when a comparable gun out of another manufacturer that's built here in the U.S. whatever it may be is $1,100? Well, there's a $500 difference somewhere. And it might be in the materials, what they're paying the people in Brazil to make it, if that's, I believe that's where they're being made, things such as that. So, take that for what it's worth. If you're a 1911 fan, I got to tell you, I'm actually a fan of several different manufacturers that are out there. Springfield has their 1911 A1 that has the aluminum alloy frame and the stainless slide. It's actually a matte finish slide. And that's a nice gun. 45 caliber. It's lighter weight because the frame is alloy. And I got to tell you, there's been some myths about this aluminum alloy. They say that the aluminum frames, it's only going to last about 40,000 rounds. Well, most guns are never going to see that. Mine, almost all of my guns have seen at least that. But they say that that's the case. Here's the deal. They also used to say that aluminum engine blocks weren't going to last very long because the first several models that came out sucked. Then they started adding other alloys to them, and metallurgy went to the next step with aluminums. So when you've got these aluminum alloy frames, they last a long time. We used to have aluminum alloy framed Springfield 1911 A1s available for rent. And those guns probably have over 100,000 rounds through them, full size, 1911, full power loads, 230 grain ball going through them. And those don't have any cracks or any wear or anything. As a matter of fact, they wear quite nicely. Really, the only issues that I have come across personally when I have seen different metals put together is if you have a titanium frame and a carbon slide, that galls. And I have one of those guns. I have a galling issue. I just have the whole thing smoothed out and honed out and nice. And now I've got to send it off to get a finish, probably something like diamond black, ultra hard, ultra smooth finish on the rails where the slide and the frame meet, so the galling will finally come to an end. Otherwise, the gun just keeps getting lighter all the time because we're having to polish all of that garbage down. So there you go, little 411 on the 1911s. I'm a huge fan of Kimber, by the way. Usually you got to get somebody to polish a thing or two up here and there, but great guns, they last a long time. Got some more listener email after the break regarding training. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back. Okay, there's a fella by the name of Pete, and Pete and I exchange emails on a pretty regular basis. Pete's a good guy, and our emails are rather candid, so I have this we have this mutual respect back and forth. But here's an email not too dissimilar from emails that I get almost every week. So I'm finally just going to do this on the air. Bill, you're not one to mince words, which is an admirable trait in a man these days. What is the deal with all the emails from Ignatius, being Ignatius Piazza of Front Sight, now that I've shown interest and bought all of the curriculum materials, .. that you probably established, No, I didn't establish all those materials. What I did was I wrote all the curriculum. It's like going to a used car lot, showing interest, and then having the salesman goad you over and over, trying to seal the deal. I don't need the CCW class since the North Carolina CCW is recognized in more states than I plan on visiting in the near future. I do want my significant other to get her CCW, but that's $80 and 5 miles away. We have to shoot at human silhouettes to get ours, so it's not like we have our thumbs up our backsides and they just hand them out. I was just chided by the instructor for shooting at the head rather than the center of mass, but all hits were made, so it was a done deal. And in a shall issue state. Call me crazy, but I prefer shooting for the cranium and the groupings were tight. Obviously, shooting at the real deal in a crisis situation would probably be totally different, but I figure 230 grain round in the nose ends things immediately. I always shoot for the head first. I guess I need to retrain myself and shoot for the solar plexus. I just figure one pop to the top ends it immediately. Me and my significant other fully intend to get properly trained, but I'm growing less inclined to do so at front sight. Jeebus Cripes, spelled kind of interestingly. Every other day, there's an email and a last-minute deal. If it's so damn great, why do they use these techniques for generating business? Do you still teach? I want to be trained by the best rather than some huckster looking to fill his coffers with used car tactics. I just wanted to learn from the best and enjoy our quote-unquote honeymoon during the evenings. So, later, Pete. All right, Pete, thanks for sending in the email. And this is not too dissimilar to emails I get all the time. People ask me about front sight on a regular basis. And quite honestly, they go after this this marketing that that Iggy does. So what Piazza does, the guy that owns a place, he has guerrilla marketing tactics, guerrilla marketing techniques. If you're familiar at all with the term guerrilla marketing, it's this. It's every source, every medium that he believes to be effective, both price-wise and for getting people in. And, of course, email is free. You just type the thing out and send it off to your list. He'll bombard you with it, absolutely bombard you. And every piece of mail that you ever get will absolutely, unequivocally have at least three criteria. One, it's red and white and black. White paper, red and black ink. It's also got his photograph on there because you really want to look at this guy in the face. And the third, it's got a lot of huge, bold-face type. In-your-face, bold-face type. Those are the three things you will always see on any literature coming from front sight when it comes to marketing stuff. Now, let's talk about that first, and then I'll get into some of the things you're talking about, like shooting to the head. Do I still teach? I am available to teach individuals and groups. If you're in Las Vegas or you come to Las Vegas, my rate is a little less than if I have to travel. But I am available to teach. I was the lead range master out at Front Sight, which is by far the largest firearms training organization in the free world. And I wrote virtually all of the curriculum. And I am qualified to run every course that they ever offered out there in each and every weapon systems and then some. I am available for training, for training groups or private people, individuals. I have done so many times over the years. Yes, I'm available for that. You can send me an email if you like. When it comes to some of these other things, however you feel about this guerrilla marketing, look at it like this. The guy's pretty smart when it comes to business. Is he a shooter at heart? No. You know, the guy's a marketer. He's not even really a businessman. He's a marketing guy, which is why you see the effects of all these marketing things. Right? It probably costs, with staff and materials and, you know, overhead, it probably costs about, you know, $6,000 to $7,000 for him to put on a class that would contain 40 people. All right, $6,000 to $7,000, maybe even $8,000. Let's go a little bit higher when it comes to materials, time, personnel, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's 40 people on the range. There's only 3 staff members. So it's kind of weak there. And the most that you're going to pay that, you're probably going to average around a range master, an instructor, and a line coach. All that added up for 4 days is about, I don't know, let me see, about $2,500. So you got that in staffing. Let's call it $7,500, $8,000 for the support personnel, anything that was put in there, the marketing to get you in there. And people are spending $1,000 or $2,000 for a membership. So you only need like 4 or 5 out of the 40 people that are there to cover your expenses. And if people are taking repeat classes, okay, no big deal. They already paid for their portion of the class. But still, let's say you got 20 people paying for the class. And you got the other 20 people that are returned, which isn't the case. It's usually a lot more people are newer. But let's say it's half and half, all right? So you got 20 people, about 4 or 5 of them pay for the class. So you got 15 or 16 that are showing you a gross profit. And there's not a whole bunch of internal overhead, so it's probably 12 or 13 or net profit. Anything more than that is just additional profit. So that's what all those marketing techniques are. Latest, greatest deal, the best thing you ever saw, blah, da, 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 da. So, Pete, that's the answer. Everybody else that sends me those emails, that's the answer for you. That's what I've got for you. When it comes to shooting to the head, Pete, I got to tell you something. One shot to the head, the person, if you actually put it into the cranioocular cavity, which is, it's kind of a box, and it is the cheekbones over to the nose, to the outside edge of the eye, to the eyebrow, and down. It's kind of a box, about a 3 by 4 inch box of the face. It's essentially this. It's at ear level, and it's in a band all the way around the head because you have just so much around there that's pretty well soft. Right to the face, you got, you know, the eye sockets, the nose, the soft honeycomb tissue of the sinuses behind the thin cheekbone, those sorts of things. But all the way around in the band of the head, even around to the back, your skull's not that hard. So you want to shoot at ear level, in the center of whatever target area is available, if you take a headshot. If you do that, I guarantee you, you get a legitimate, straight-on bullet going into the brain, the person's going to die. And they're going to be dead before they hit the ground. That's called a hostage rescue shot, or a failure to stop. To just go there directly, there's only 3 occasions when you ever want to go to the head without actually shooting at the thorax first. You want to go to the head if it's a hostage situation. You cannot risk a failure to stop. Even if you've got some area, some arm, which isn't a lethal area anyhow, you've got maybe a little bit of chest showing, maybe you've got some neck, which is a very difficult shot to make because it's small, you're under stress. Okay, so hostage situation, take one up to the brain box. Right? If it's the only target available, so say they're shooting from behind cover, and it's the only thing that they're giving to you, they're popping out, shooting around a corner and popping back in, all they're giving you is the head. Okay, then you'd take that. All right, so we have those two established. If it's a hostage situation, it's the only thing they're giving you. Third one, it's actually pretty obvious. It's if they have body armor. If they have something, some sort of body armor covering their chest. Okay, so those are the 3 situations. Short of that, what you're doing is you're killing somebody right off the bat. If you get shot, there's an 86% survivability rate in an urban area for gunshot wounds. Now, keep in mind, gunshot wounds in today's day and age, pardon me, 1 second. Still trying to clear out from this head cold, and I'm having a smoothie this morning, and probably not the right recipe during a radio show. Anyhow, so if you've got 86% of these people surviving, realize that most of the people are not getting shot in the chest with a 940 or 45. They're going all over the place. But, all right, what you're looking for is a shot into the rib cage, the thorax. Inside there, you've got the heart, the lungs. You've got just a little bit below that on one side. You've got the liver. The liver and the pancreas are a couple of organs that expand and do not contract. Those will cause you trouble. You've got, behind the rib cage, you've also got major blood vessels. So that's really kind of the boiler room. I like to refer to the chest area, the thorax, as the hydraulics, and the brain as the electrical. So what you're looking to do is you want to start off by getting a couple, 2 to 3 rounds inside the thorax. Okay, inside that, and it's not center of mass. The center of mass is about your solar plexus, which is a little low. If it's inside the rib cage, that's where you want to shoot. That's real simple. Inside the rib cage is known as the thoracic cavity. And again, wherever you would see ribs, that's the target area. It's actually a little higher up than you might think, even up to the shoulder level. You know, just below the clavicle, kind of inside the deltoid, all right? Inside the deltoid, probably about 4 inches, that's where the edge is going to be. Wherever the rib cage is, that's where you want to go for first. If that doesn't work, you get 2 to 3 rounds in there, it doesn't work, then you go to the head. Unless you have one of those three situations. Obvious body armor, only target available, or a hostage situation. So there you go. Don't just go dumping rounds into somebody's face. All right, that's not the initial answer. That'll cause you issues when it comes to going to court or having charges filed on you through the district attorney's office. So start with the chest. If that's not available, go to the head. Start with the chest. If it doesn't work, go to the head. All right? So, more after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
In Arizona, you have the self-proclaimed toughest sheriff in America, Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Now, this is the guy that has the tent cities. He's the guy that has the tent community, I should call it. He's the guy that makes his inmates wear pink. He's the guy that actually puts the convicted who are doing time in his Maricopa County jail on chain gangs and actually has them go out and work. He's the guy that once upon a time took all of the TV out of the jail. And it got all the way to Supreme Court. Supreme Court says you have to offer cable TV. And that was their decision. He says, okay, fine. So now he offers cable TV. But he only allows 2 channels to be piped in. That's the Disney Channel and the Weather Channel. And that's it. There's no caffeine, no coffee, and you have to pay for your meals, which generally are not the best. He'll generally get stuff that's beginning to expire from other sources. Like if you buy milk, it has an expiration date. That's actually a sell-by date and expires a few days after that. Within that window, that's all the kinds of food that he feeds at people. And he makes them pay for it, right? One of the things that he does is he arrests illegals in Maricopa County, Arizona, which encompasses the Phoenix area, for being in this country illegally. So here's a little story for you. The Homeland Security Department wants Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Maricopa County, Arizona, to stop arresting illegal immigrants whose only crime was crossing the U.S.-Mexico border without documents. The thing is, Arpaio doesn't much care. I'm not going to bend to the federal government. I'm doing my job, he said. I don't report to the federal government. I report to the people. Shifting winds in Washington have led the Homeland Security Department to rework a federal program. This has allowed Arpaio's deputies to make federal immigration arrests since February 2007. It's not yet known whether Arpaio, who has 160 deputies and jail officers trained to make federal immigration arrests and speed up deportations, if he'll sign the new deal. If he doesn't, the feds say he would lose his authority to make any federal immigration arrests, which is not true. The revamped program would require Arpaio to clear plans for immigration sweeps beforehand with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and to coordinate with ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, before releasing information about such enforcement actions to the news media. Those requirements don't sit well with the sheriff, who is known for his independence and well-oiled media operation. Even as he considered whether to sign the deal, Arpaio launched a three-day immigration sweep east of Metro Phoenix on July 24th. Deputies arrested 74 people. 25 of them were illegal immigrants. 10 of the illegal immigrants were released because they had committed no other crimes. And that fact pitted Arpaio against Homeland Security. Arpaio says the feds told his deputies to let them go, while Homeland Security said the decision was exclusively Arpaio's. The sweep was the latest of 10 Arpaio has conducted in the last 2.5 years. Many were held in heavily Latino areas in metropolitan Phoenix, with deputies stopping drivers for traffic violations. The sweeps sparked several angry protests from critics who said they amounted to racial profiling and led a Justice Department investigation of Arpaio. Arpaio said the people were pulled over where they were approached because deputies had probable cause to believe they'd committed crimes. Homeland Security's revamped program focuses on the most serious criminals and creates 3 priority levels for immigrants who are to be arrested and detained. Immigrants convicted or arrested of major drug offenses or violent offenses such as murder, manslaughter, rape, or robbery, or kidnapping are the top priority. The other 2 levels pertain to immigrants with prior convictions, but people whose only crime is being in the country illegally are not considered under the program. 11 agencies in the country have signed the new so-called 287G agreement, while 66 agencies operating under the old program, including Arpaio's, were given 90 days starting July 10th to decide whether they wanted to agree to the revamped program, said DHS spokesman Matthew Chandler. Arpaio called the new program an amnesty for illegal immigrants. This really bothers me that Arpaio's out there doing his job. The people are in this country illegally, so they got here by violating the law and showing no respect whatsoever for our laws by entering the country doing just that. Their first act in this country, breaking a law. And they knew that. And we're rewarding them through DHS's program here. They're under the executive branch. So the de facto President Obama can say, look, we don't want to stir up the pot here. We want to potentially curb some Latino votes. So we're going to allow them some amnesty. And, you know, it's a hot button issue. Nobody in this country, I shouldn't say nobody, the vast majority, we're talking above 80% of the citizens of the United States want the illegal immigrations into this country stopped and the people that are here illegally sent back to wherever they came from. Of course, the vast majority come from Mexico and South America. However, the politicians on both sides of the aisle don't really push for that, because what they're looking for is them to become legal through either a Democratic or Republican reform so that they can just enhance their voter base. Oh, the Democrats let us stay, we're going to vote for them. Or the Republicans let us stay, we're going to vote for them. It's trying to curb votes, which sucks. We shouldn't be allowing them to do that. Arpaio, go on. You're the man. More after the break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
There is one group of federal agents that their sole mission is to really screw you out of your gun rights, and that's the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, BATFE, generically referred to as ATF. Very commonly now it's catching on, they call it the ATFU. Because that seems to be what they're looking to do. So here's a little story, a spotlight on ATF perjury, yet again. An ATF supervisor and lead supervisor on a case has testified that investigators perjured themselves to get a wiretap order. Here's the setup. A one-time county sheriff's deputy who built a criminal empire out of his motorcycle shop, maintaining power through fear and violence, and with the help from Hell's Angels and crooked lawmen. Yet another example of the only ones, past and present, being more trustworthy to bear arms than you and I, current and former law enforcement, right? So how did the ATF professionals handle it? An agent from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is expected to tell the court that investigators lied in order to get permission to put a wiretap on Holloway's phones. When Vince Cefalu, Vince Cefalu, C-E-F-A-L-U, spoke up about the unethical and illegal actions, he was removed from the case. The story references an interesting website, cleanupatf.org, which tells us the following. Managers, counsel, internal affairs, and staff of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, has repeatedly given false testimony, concealed substantial waste, fraud, and abuse, abused their lawful authority, and waged systematic campaigns of reprisal against their own employees that dare to speak out under the Federal Whistleblowers Act. This website is intended by members of the ATF community to promote restoration of integrity, accountability, and responsibility to ATF's leadership and regain the trust of the American taxpayer. Again, that's cleanupatf.org. Interesting indeed. And while the goal is laudable, some of us don't see how that can be done, nor how the agency's functions can be considered even remotely constitutional, and would prefer just to boot the BATFE. It's not the first time that gun rights advocates have learned that we can't trust the ATF under oath. Who wants to bet it's going to be the last? I don't know. They are just not a trustworthy group of individuals. Here's the way I see it, guys. You get one person and you give them authority, just one person. In most cases, that person is going to take that authority and try to push it just a little bit. Now, you get a group of people and give them some authority. And you let them, I guess, self-manage themselves. They really don't have a bunch of oversight from outside sources. It's a group of people, you give them authority, they provide their own oversight. They're going to run rampant, which is exactly what's happened with the ATF. The agents themselves think they can do whatever the hell they want because they've established a track record from agents of yesterday and yesteryear of doing just that and being supported by the internal administration. So, there you go. That is what we have. Now, we're going to switch just a little bit on the Firearms Freedom Act. There's been a couple of them, one in Tennessee and one in Montana. The ATF had said, you can't do that. Here's a little story on that. There's a website that offers rallying points for this Firearms Freedom Act. You'll recall we talked about Firearms Freedom Act, the FFA efforts in Tennessee and Montana and elsewhere, and particularly about the ATF response. Keep in mind, Utah is looking at doing this, Texas is looking at doing this, a couple states are looking at doing this. Because of the act, here's the ATF response. Now, let me give you a little background, all right? Montana passed a law, and Tennessee passed a law. And what they said is, guns that are manufactured in our state, that are manufactured here, sold to the residents of this state, and intended to stay within the borders of this state, are exempt from federal firearms laws. Right? We don't have to deal with any of the federal firearms laws or any of the BS of the ATF. Here's what the ATF said. Because the act conflicts with federal firearms laws and regulations, federal law supersedes the act, and all provisions of the Gun Control Act and the National Firearms Act and their corresponding regulations continue to apply. That was in the ATF response. Well, what I professed is, if you are an FFL dealer, you have an FFL license, which is managed, a federal firearms license to sell guns, which is managed and overseen. You apply to the ATF to get it. They manage and oversee it. What you would need, also to manufacture guns, ammunition, all that stuff. You have to go through the federal arm, the ATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Now, if you have somebody that knows how to make guns and they do not have an FFL, and you've got somebody who wants to sell guns who does not have an FFL, those are the people to do this with. You don't want to do it with people who already have a federal firearms license, because their agreement to have that license and do what they do, it may very well violate that license. I'm sure that it does. I'm sure there's provisions in that license which could cause these people jail time, federal jail time, if they violate it. So you don't want to have gun manufacturers, somebody that makes guns that already has an FFL. You want to get somebody that knows how to do it with machines that doesn't have an FFL. So then the ATF, they're removed from the system. They're not within the ATF system. The ATF doesn't know them. You can fly a chirping little bird at them. Same thing with the guy that would sell these guns. You don't want to have somebody with an FFL already. The Montana Sports Shooting Association is planning a lawsuit in response to this letter that came out from the ATF. MSSA President Gary Marbut says this: in order to foster the Firearms Freedom Act movement, I have established the domain name of www.firearmsfreedomact.com. So you can go to firearmsfreedomact.com to see what's going on there. He intends this to be an information and networking point for this cascading movement. The site includes background information, status on progress in the states, model legislation, links to news reports about the movement, and more. And the MSSA response to the ATF letter answers a question we discussed in comments and previous news that I've read to you. The letters are addressed only to FFLs, and letters are not addressed to non-FFLs, those folks who are potential participants in the state-made gun business, as I just said. You don't want to have people with FFLs participating in these state laws. The ATF can't do anything about it then. What they're trying to do now is exercise control over people who have FFLs, who have established a relationship with the ATF. So if those people want to do it, they'd probably have to surrender their FFL and no longer do any sort of business that would be any part of any federal law. They'd have to be specifically just within these state guns. I don't know if you could make a living selling just guns within the state. You could make a living building them, I'm sure. I'm quite sure of that. But just selling them probably just be like an added part to your business. Okay, here's a word, a term, coined by the late, great Colonel Jeff Cooper, who began the American Pistol Institute, which went to Gunsight Academy, now just known as Gunsight. And he coined a phrase called a hoplophobe or hoplophobia. And I don't know how he came up with that. Now, Jeff Cooper was a brilliant guy. I don't know if you ever read any of his papers, Cooper's Corner. You can certainly Google Cooper's Corner. There's a website that has all of his different writings. The guy was sharp as sharp could be. I mean, absolutely sharp as a tack with wit to the end of the days. I mean, he died like 86, 87, 88 years old, and still his mind was absolutely sharp. His body gave up long before his mind did. His mind was strong until the day he passed. So years ago, the late Colonel Jeff Cooper, deemed to many to have been the father of modern handgunnery, or simply the guru, coined a term that has now become part of the American lexicon and has actually been recognized as a genuine phobia. Hoplophobia, an irrational fear of firearms and other forms of weaponry. Okay, I've recently finished the manuscript. I'm reading this. This is Alan Gottlieb actually wrote this. I've recently finished the manuscript for a new book with Alan Gottlieb called Assault on Weapons, The Campaign to Eliminate Your Guns, to be published by Merrill Press. We take a look at the movement to eliminate or at least severely restrict gun ownership, and there are several examples of hoplophobia in that text. The most common manifestation of hoplophobia is in the area that instruments possess a will of their own apart from that of their user, and that the description of which was written by Jeff Cooper. Let me read again. The most common manifestation of hoplophobia is the idea that instruments possess a will of their own apart from that of their user, which means, in effect, that if someone sees a gun sitting on a table, they're afraid that it's just going to jump up and start shooting on its own. Part of the reason is, a lot of times you'll hear people say in the news, if a gun goes bang and someone gets hurt or injured or killed, whatever, oftentimes the person says, the gun just went off. I absolutely hate hearing that. I also hate hearing things like 5 o'clock a.m. in the morning, as opposed to 5 o'clock a.m. in the afternoon, 5 a.m. in the morning. It's like a hot water heater. Why would you heat hot water? You heat cold water. It's a water heater. So hot water heaters, 5 a.m. in the morning, the gun just went off. Those are the types of things that just, it baffles me because people don't actually think of the words that they're using. Guns don't just go off. Have you ever noticed anytime anyone's ever claimed the gun just went off, that gun happened to be in someone's hand at the time that it just magically, mysteriously, without provocation, went off on its own? The gun never just goes off when it's in your nightstand, or if it's in your safe, or if it's in your closet, or in your glove box. Well, sometimes it's in your glove box with a bunch of other garbage and not holstered the way it should be. The gun never just goes off when it's being left alone. Guns just go off in someone's hand. Now, how does that happen? Do you think it's kind of the kinetic energy that your body produces that just senses something inside the gun to make it come alive? And then that live feeling somehow ignites the primer. Bam! A round goes off. Yeah, I don't think so. I think someone's dumbass got their finger on the trigger and pressed it to the rear, and the gun then went off. Guns don't go bang without the firing pin slamming into the primer. So however that works on your gun, and something tells me, it's probably a press of the trigger. Just from what I have read, just from what I've seen, just from my very limited knowledge of firearms, it's probably the trigger, but I don't know. Somehow or another, the firing pin slammed into the primer, and then it just goes off. You want to know how? If a gun just went off, it would be a problem most likely with the ammunition. So you take the shell casing of that round that just went off and look and see if there's a mark, an indentation from the firing pin on the back. Oh, wow, look at that. Didn't just go off. Huh. A primer was smacked by a firing pin. So that's what Jeff Cooper's talking about. People that are afraid something like that might happen. So the hoplophobia should not be mistaken for outright social bigotry against firearms and the people who own them. One so often leads to the other, but they are not the same thing. The social bigot believes himself or herself to be superior to the firearms owner in any number of arenas, including education and salary, whereas the hoplophobe is generally fearful of firearms. They're fearful of the actual instrument itself. Like if you go to hand a gun to somebody, loaded, not like, oh my God, I can't touch it, I'm afraid of guns. Are you afraid of a hammer? Are you afraid of a baseball bat? Are you afraid of a pair of scissors? Are you afraid of a thumbtack? I mean, it's an inanimate object. Guns are inanimate objects. Can't do anything unless you're in the hands of somebody else. Much as, pretty much, everything. This pen that's sitting next to me, it's not just going to get up and start writing on its own. It's under my will, under my direction. If I pick up that pen and start writing with it, well, then it's being used for its purpose. But until then, it's an inanimate object. It's doing nothing. When I use it, it's an inanimate object that's under my control. Much the same as a gun. Now, a gun's a little bit more mechanical, so you have to have a little bit more prowess to understand how to run the thing properly, efficiently, and effectively. So, hoplophobes, they're out there. And oftentimes, those hoplophobes will manifest into outright anti-gun spokespeople. Sometimes you get these people that are anti-gun for financial reasons. You know, I really kind of suspect the people at Brady Campaign and VPC, they're probably doing it for the money because they're getting a lot of hoplophobes to give them money. So whether they believe that you should have guns or not, it does. It proves it. It really proves that the people with these anti-gun coalitions, again, such as Brady Campaign, Violence Policy Center, these sorts of people are in it for the money. And let me tell you why. It's real easy to see. It's plain to see. They're in this for the money. Because they state that they want to limit gun violence. Yeah, the Brady Campaign to prevent gun violence, the Violence Policy Center to prevent gun violence, whatever they are, they all say they want to prevent gun violence. Well, I established on this show a couple of weeks ago that there's no longer a need for them because we have all the laws on the books already to stop gun violence. The thing is, people who cause gun violence are breaking the laws. So we have cops to enforce the laws. We have the laws on the book. So we don't need them anymore. And then when they go after things that have nothing to do with any sort of gun violence, nothing that would have any sort of violence because of a gun, just simply a mere policy change or a shift or a view or an opinion, they're all over it. Why are they all over it? Because if other people feel the same way, they can get more money. So it's not to stop violence. It's not to stop gun violence. It's to make money on a social issue. So it's all about the almighty dollar. Brady Campaign, Violence Policy Center, all sorts of anti-gun groups out there, when it comes to the big levels, they're all about the money. And they're trying to soak you for your contributions if you feel the same way. That's the way I see it. I'll be back after the break. My name is Bill Carnes, and you're listening to 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, in Birmingham, Alabama, the sheriff of the most populous county in Alabama may try to get the governor to call National Guard troops to help maintain order in his county after a judge cleared the way for cuts in the sheriff's budget and hopes dimmed for a quick end to a budget crisis. Circuit Judge Joseph Buhacker ruled that the leaders in Jefferson County, now trying to head off a municipal bankruptcy filing on historic proportions, could go ahead with plans to slash $4.1 million from the budget of Sheriff Mike Hale, who has filed a lawsuit to temporarily block spending cuts for his office. About 1,000 county workers are already on unpaid leave. They're laid off because courts threw out a key county tax. And Hale has warned that the reductions to his budget would mean fewer patrols by deputies and decreased courthouse security. A spokesman for Hale, Randy Christian, said the sheriff told Governor Bob Riley after the ruling that the state assistance might be needed to perform basic law enforcement tasks once the department's current funding is exhausted in early September. "We will certainly be looking at calling in the National Guard," said Christian. Hell may have to cut as many as 188 deputies and almost 300 civilian workers out of more than 700 employees total in Buhacker's ruling. That would leave just enough workers to staff the county's two jails and hold about 1,000 prisoners on average. Christian said the department couldn't lose either jail or release inmates, but it would send as many prisoners as possible to the state prison system, which already is badly overcrowded. Riley previously refused to declare a state of emergency in Jefferson County, which has about 640,000 residents and includes the state's largest city, Birmingham. He hasn't ruled out sending in National Guard members or state troopers if needed. Members of the county's legislative declaration scheduled a meeting to consider a replacement for the defunct occupational tax, the one that was overruled by a judge. All right. I see this as a, rather lousy situation to be in. I'm not a big fan of taxing and using a bunch of taxes to support things when it comes to a lot of waste, which is in every government system there is. You got to find the waste. You ever notice that some of the most beautiful buildings in your entire city, in your entire county, oftentimes, in a lot of the bigger towns, are county and city buildings? Tens of millions of extra dollars on this Art Deco garbage. We don't need to deal with that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if I were this county sheriff, the first thing I would do is I would eliminate all of the guards, except for one operating the metal detector, from the courthouse. From the courthouse. That's what I would do. You know, don't trust these guys. Don't trust these guys as far as you can spit on them if they have something to do with affecting your life through being elected or appointed into government. Just don't trust them. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.